Chapter 2. Potter has clearly lost his mind. He's always been a deranged lunatic. Lunatic. Ha! Draco knew as much in school, and working with a man for 3 years and living in each other's back pockets at the DMLE has only cemented that opinion. He's always been irritable, but now he's like a coiled spring. Potter cannot sit still to save his life. He's in his stupid shed half the time, hacking away at a log as if it's done him a personal injury. If he's not in the shed, he's out in the forest running and doing Merlin knows what. And when he comes barging into the cabin, he looks at Draco as if he's a dementor coming for his soul. But instead of fainting like he used to, he's throwing things. Potter's been deliberately infuriating, Draco's sure of it. He's never been loquacious, but it's like pulling teeth with him now. He refuses to talk about anything of significance, neither about his condition nor why he's living alone in a forest when Draco can easily tell he hates it. Does he have to be so fucking beautiful on top of being deranged, though? It's upsetting. Draco has promised himself to keep things strictly compartmentalized. Potter is his partner, his friend, and he's made it very clear that is all there ever be. Draco has a mission. Ron and Hermione put him in charge, and he will see it through. Draco can't afford to get distracted. But it's like Potter's filled out since the bite. He hasn't been scrawny in a long time, but he seems to have packed on muscle the way his Henley stretches across his chest. He's constantly leaving the top 2 buttons undone, as if it isn't the middle of winter, and it's badly affecting Draco's health, just that tiny glimpse of dark chest hair. Potter's hair is long enough he keeps putting it up into a bun most of the time, but some curls always escape and tumble across his forehead. Draco wants to touch his beard. Draco's own attempt at facial hair were doomed from the start. Straggly, translucent fuzz is all he gets for his trouble. Draco looks like a badly plucked chicken, but Potter looks good. Older, a little wild, a little stern. Potter shuffles around the cabin sans glasses sometimes. In the pre-dawn morning when Draco catches him before he runs. The green of his eyes without the shield of spectacles feels like a stupefy straight to the chest. No wonder Draco cannot sleep under the constant barrage of Potter's eyes and his stupid lush beard. The expanse of his chest under that damnable Henley mocks him. The leer of the hollow of his throat. You want that. Too bad. Draco keeps getting distracted by the vulnerable nape of his neck. Potter shouldn't ever look that vulnerable. Like that story of Achilles Draco read when he was younger. That tender spot of skin left exposed and open to attack. This is not new, this need to have Potter's back, to shield him. Draco has had Potter's blood on his hands, holding in his guts after he took a stray to Findo. Yelling for the Mediwizards and cursing Potter's name and the names of his ancestors. Even his saintly parents for producing such a reckless fucking idiot. Draco knows Potter's not indestructible, but that fact has never before made him weak in the knees. Didn't make him want to touch, to curve his palm over the knob of his spine, to press his lips there and just breathe in the scent of Potter's skin. That's a lie, but Draco has it under control. Draco made the mistake of watching Potter's werewolf yoga routine that one time, and almost brained himself on the doorframe. He's seen Potter shuffle around Grimmauld Place in ratty joggers a million times before. Potter's ass didn't look like this then, surely. Isn't it enough that the man has been the bane of his existence for 15 years now? Must he be Draco's wet dream too? Is this the punishment for the crimes of his youth? And the wolf is there, under Potter's skin, Draco can tell. It's there in the way Potter uses his senses sometimes. How he can hear Draco's footsteps no matter how hard Draco tries to be quiet. How he recoils from certain smells. Draco spent the last 6 months learning everything there is to know about lycanthropy and the changes wrought by the family. The wolf is new, but everything else about Potter is achingly the same. He's still the man who got blindingly drunk that night almost 2 years ago now, pushed Draco down into the plush Grimmauld Place carpet and kissed him. It'd been over so fast Draco didn't even have time to lock away the taste of Potter's lips in his memory. He remembers whiskey and the breath of Potter's palm on his chest. The buzzing white noise in his head, like badly done occlumency, and Potter's drunken snore in his ear a second later. Potter locked himself away in some cabin, away from everyone he loves. He put himself back in the cupboard. Draco knows about that charming detail of Potter's childhood, and made himself small. Draco may not have been capable of killing Dumbledore back then, but he's willing to try again with Harry's so-called relatives, for the things they put into Potter's head. And if the killing curse was still beyond him, Draco's had to become quite proficient with Crucio. Parsville returns on a Tuesday. He flies in through the open kitchen window while Harry's doing the washing up and lands on Harry's shoulder. "Hello there, buddy," Harry says. Parsville hoots and nuzzles his beak into Harry's hair above the ear. "Missed me, did you?" The letter's addressed to Draco, but Harry unfolds the parchment anyway. It's from Hermione. "Draco, you found him. I knew you could do it. Are you sure he's all right?" "He says he's all right, but you have to make sure. One's been talking to Charlie, and we were right. The family's been in contact with the remaining alchemist circle, focusing on specific methods of distilling the essence of magical creatures. I think I found a way to improve our potion to strengthen the children's magical core. I attached a copy of the adjusted brewing instructions. I welcome your thoughts. Give Harry our love. He'll come around, you'll see. Just be patient. Hermione. P.S. Ron wants me to tell you, you have his permission to kick Harry's butt."
"What's it say?"
Draco stands in the doorway, face unreadable. "Ron wants you to kick my ass."
"Doubtful."
Draco takes a parchment from Harry's hands, their fingers touching. Harry flexes his hand.
"Are your fingers hurting?"
Draco asks. "I can make you some chamomile tea."
"What?" "No, my fingers are fine."
Draco frowns. "If you say so." He walks into the living room and spreads out the letter on the coffee table. Harry lets Parsville back out the window to hunt for his lunch. "I'm going for a walk," he says. "Half out the door already."
"Children,"
Hermione wrote.
"What children?"
Harry walks mindlessly, putting one foot in front of the other, without a destination in mind. The letter's the first contact he's had with home in many months. Just seeing Hermione's handwriting makes his throat close up. There are tracks on the path from people going past on skis. Maybe he should look into that. There's probably a place in town to buy skis. How hard can it be? The tracks don't look like they're fresh. Harry usually stays off the main path with regular foot travel. Less chance of coming across hikers or skiers that way. He doesn't want to deal with any uncomfortable encounters with the locals. He's never had any issue when he went into town, but Harry's not stupid. This isn't London, or even Berlin. There's a small shop in town where Harry buys his fruit and veg run by a Vietnamese immigrant family. The woman who sold him his groceries spoke a little English to Harry's elation, and was very excited to hear he was from England, having family in Manchester. But they're the only ones who look different. He grew up as one of only a handful of brown faces in a sea of white. And his so-called family was an education, besides. Harry doesn't want to deal with the Petunias and Vernons of the world, wondering what the lone brown guy is doing wandering around the forest. Harry may not speak the local language, but he knows the look when he sees it. The slow, suspicious squint of, "You don't belong here." Harry veers off the signposted path to walk down to the small stream, which gives the valley its name. It's frozen over now, but in the summer months, he used to sit in the shadow of the beech trees lining the water for hours, sunlight slanting through the trees and illuminating the leaves and grass in vivid green. He would dangle his bare feet in the water, listening to the burbling sounds of the stream and the birds overhead, and let his mind go blank. The stream is quiet and the trees bereft of leaves now. Everything looks stark and white under a thick blanket of snow and ice. There's an old mining shaft up ahead, a remnant of a bygone era of silver and tin mining. It doesn't look like much, just a hole in the ground, overgrown and forgotten. There are no signposts on the main path, just the red keep out sign that warns off explorers. Harry keeps walking. He can't stop thinking about the letter. What children was Hermione talking about? Why were they in need of course strengthening potion, and what did it have to do with the family? Stokes, the man who bit Harry, was the last of the family, wasn't he? Harry had found no children when he tracked him down. Harry isn't surprised that Hermione is already full steam ahead on a new mission, something that involves Draco. Even with a newborn, she isn't happy without at least 15 projects going at the same time. Harry knows she'll be Minister for Magic one day, and Britain better be ready when she does. She threw herself into figuring out Harry's furry little problem right away, adjusting the wolfsbane potion to Harry's particular strain. He doesn't need it anymore, but the first transformations were agony, his unwilling body being twisted and bent into a new shape by the pull of the moon. She wouldn't be so quick to help him if she knew why he really left, would she? Not even Hermione would stand with him if she knew. And Ron, God, Harry doesn't know what he'd do if Ron ever found out. How could he ever face them again, knowing the images his mind conjured up? The helpless, horrifying urge to claim a child not even born yet. To claim her little body with his teeth. The overwhelming refrain of, mine, 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 his head ringing with it. He could almost see himself do it, his teeth sinking into her flesh. Like back in fifth year, lying in bed petrified in terror while watching himself strike Arthur Weasley in Nagini's body, out of control and unable to stop it. The same feeling of being taken over by something beyond his control. He couldn't, wouldn't, risk it. It's a long while before Harry guides his feet back towards the clearing in the trees and the small cabin with smoke rising from the chimney, towards Draco. The other reason Harry left like a thief in the night. Draco doesn't say anything when Harry returns. He stays in the bedroom for the afternoon with the door closed. It's only when Harry knocks on the door to ask if Draco wants dinner that he joins Harry. They don't talk much. Draco's uncharacteristically quiet. In the evening, Draco's laying on his back in front of the fireplace on the transfigured plush rug. The freshly stoked fire makes his hair gleam rose gold and makes tiny flames flicker in his almost colourless eyes. He has one soft foot propped up on the knee of his bent leg, foot swaying to the slow beat of a song on the radio, a woman singing in breathy German. Harry doesn't understand a word, but it sounds mournful and yearning. Harry's on the sofa, the book in his hand sinking down in his lap, watching Draco close his eyes, long lashes almost translucent on pink cheeks, as the last chords of the song strum quietly into silence. It's rare to see Draco so relaxed, so perfectly quiescent. It took Harry more than a year of being partnered with him to understand that every moment of every day, there was a current of anxiety thrumming just under Draco's skin, a persistent refrain of, not good enough. Harry knows how it feels to be thought of as a freak, or worse, not thought of at all, easily discarded like so much rubbish. He doesn't know how it feels when the person you want to please the most, the person whose approval you crave above all else, finds you lacking. Harry never expected anything from the Dursleys. But Lucius had been the shining light of Draco's childhood, the pinnacle of what a wizard ought to be. Harry is glad Lucius is dead, if only so Draco is free of his influence. Narcissa is more complicated. Harry has no love for the woman, but she did save his life, and Draco worships the ground she walks on, while his father is a hissing coil of resentment and disappointed hope in the pit of Draco's stomach. Draco told him so, furiously spitting his truths at Harry, who'd been stupid enough to ask, so terribly drunk and upset after the funeral. Radical honesty, Draco called it, like a self-imposed sentence of Veritas serum that he flings at unsuspecting recipients. Not so often anymore, but that's probably more to do with everyone but Harry learning their lesson quickly and not asking questions they don't want to know the answer to. Until Harry too became cautious, after Draco taught him exactly what Septum Semper felt like. Draco is quietly humming to himself, continuing the melody of the song on the radio, hands folded on his light blue jumper. It looks very soft, just like Draco at the moment, his angle smoothed out by firelight. Harry looks at Draco and remembers his recurring dream. Is it still remembering when he cannot forget in the first place? An evening just like this. In the small study with green brocade of wallpaper on the first floor of Grimmer Place. Harry doesn't know why, the beginning hazy like dreams are, but Draco was lying in front of a roaring fire, talking and gesturing widely, a strip of flat stomach showing above the waistband of his trousers where his white shirt had ridden up. His hair shone rose gold, and his mouth looked soft with a secret smile. And Harry was overcome, falling to his knees and sliding his hands into Draco's hair, his mouth over Draco's, cutting off his lecture. Draco's lips were sweet from elderberry wine, the inside of his mouth humid warm when Harry licked inside, as Draco went still and Harry woke up. The dreams always end with Draco going rigid under Harry's hands. "Will you ever come back?" Draco asks, his voice low. Harry startles. "What?" Draco rolls over onto his side and faces Harry, the fire in the hearth a flickering halo around his rose-gold hair. "You, what's your plan? Do you even have a plan?" "I..." Harry swallows. Does he ever have a plan? "I can't be an aura anymore." "So? Then don't be an aura. You could do anything. Take up knitting. Be a useless layabout. Join the circus." Harry looks down at the book in his lap. He can't remember a single thing about what he was reading just minutes ago. "What about you?" he asks. "What about me?" Draco lays back down on his back. "I will quit, of course. Robar's paired with Adrian Willoughby. Can you believe it? He clearly still hates me. She has checklists for everything. She studies the menu for the canteen a week in advance so she can consider the pros and cons of every meal, and then still dithers until I want to hex her in the face. You'll be doing me a favor if you quit. Do you actually think I joined because of some hidden do-gooder impulse? Don't be daft." There's a lot of things Harry could say to that, but he keeps quiet. Draco never did reveal why he joined the DMLE in the first place. "I'm rich, you see," Draco continues. "My money makes money. I could turn the manor into a museum, give tours." Draco makes an expansive gesture and puts on a droning, bored voice that he seems to think sounds appropriately like a manor tour guide. "This is where the Dark Lord slept and wanked and shit." "Did he?" Harry asks, after what appears to be a horrified pause of several years. "He must have." They shudder in unison. "Let's never speak of this again."
"Patience," Hermione said. "Let him come to you."
Patience is clearly not working. Potter's a stubborn mule of a man and will not move an inch if not shoved. And even then he will fight you every step of the way. It's been almost 3 weeks and Draco has nothing to show for it. He sent Parzival on his way with a letter to Hermione. If Potter wants to apply this time around, he can bloody well walk into town and do it the Muggle way. Draco has bigger fish to fry. He's gone over the revised brewing instructions Hermione sent, adding his comments while Potter's been out doing Merlin knows what in the forest. He updated her on Potter's general condition, the readings of the diagnostic charms, slightly elevated testosterone levels and decrease in serotonin. If Potter was a regular werewolf, he'd need to start taking waterspoon potion now, in anticipation of the full moon next week. But Potter's not a regular werewolf. The full moon makes this wolf hard to control, and the hormones readings are correlated with heightened aggression. But he isn't helpless to it. From what Draco has seen, Potter controls himself ruthlessly. Draco is prepared if things go south, but they won't. Draco is sure of it. Potter holds his magic fiercely contained. Even in the field, Potter never used his magic to kill. Incapacitate, yes. But lethal force? Not even once. Draco holds the dubious distinction of being the only person Potter ever attacked with a curse meant for serious physical harm. The man didn't even abracadabra the Dark Lord. Maybe Draco should have a plaque made. "Harry Potter tried to kill me, and all I got were some measly scars." The scars aren't nothing. They are thin and pearlescent white, slashed across his torso. Draco quite likes them, actually. They make him look very devil-may-care and rakish. He certainly never had any complaints from the men he took to bed. They're nice conversation starter and a good way to weed out the creeps who are overly invested in marks of pain on his flesh. His other mark, the dark mark, gets him attention from another sort. Death fuckers. Even hidden in the swirls and abstract brushstrokes of the stark black tattoo climbing up his left arm, their eyes would unerringly find the skull. Jacob hates their big eyes and slovenly deference. What they really want is to choke on the dark-clawed, scaly, rotting prick, and he's the next best thing. Potter's never shown any undue interest in either mark. Scars aren't all that interesting when you have your own collection, Draco's found. Focus, he admonishes himself. He needs to get Potter to talk, to figure out where his mind's at. Maybe it's time for a more direct approach. Potter's never been good at picking up subtle clues. He's either full steam ahead, act first, think later, or I will not budge and you can't make me. Draco's in the kitchen, peering into the fridge, contemplating heating up leftover pasta or making sandwiches for lunch. Potter's been holed up in the shed all morning, and Draco's bored. Potter's been acting strange. Well, stranger, since the letter arrived. He keeps looking at Draco as if he's waiting for something, or if he wants to say something. Draco cannot tell which, and Potter can't seem to make up his mind. He wordlessly walks away every time. Avoidance, thy name is Harry Potter. The door to the cabin bangs open with a resounding crash of wood on wood. Where the hell are you? Harry bellows. Draco bangs his head on the fridge. Ow! What the fuck? Potter appears in the doorway, waving a crumpled piece of parchment in his hand. His face is sweaty, dark curls spilling over his fungous brow and blazing eyes. He's panting like he's been running. What the hell is this? Draco rubs at his head. Again, ow, and squints at the paper. Is that my letter to Hermione? Don't play dumb. I'm not some lab rat you can experiment on. What's a lab rat? Who'd put a rat in a lab? What are you talking about? Harry advances on him. Parzival found me in the forest. I bet he did, Draco mutters. Damn that traitorous little feather duster. Draco will have to have serious words with him. He's Draco's owl, not Potter's, no matter what his amorous little heart says. He was supposed to fly straight back to England. So what? You've been casting spells on me. Ah, that. They're just simple diagnostic charms. And you didn't think of asking me first? Would you have said yes? No. That's why I didn't ask. Draco can see Potter's jaw working in a way that cannot be good for his molars. Draco takes a deep breath. Fighting is not productive. He needs to be the bigger person. He tries again. Hermione said... I don't care what Hermione said, Potter yells. She isn't here. You are. Oh, I'm sorry, but Hermione is a little busy right now, Draco snipes. So you'll have to deal with me instead. I didn't invite you. If Draco has to hear those words one more time, he'll hex Potter right in the face. You think I don't know that? You think your charming little forest hovel doesn't scream, fuck off, in big fucking capital letters? You don't know anything. Draco throws up his hands. Then tell me. Tell me what the fuck would make you abandon your family, your friends, your... me. What made you abandon me is what Draco doesn't say. Potter's face goes stony, walls going up as clearly as if they were made of bricks. There's no talking with you when you're like this. Fuck you. Draco will punch him again, right in his gorgeous face. Potter just looks at him. Don't you have some important woodworking you need to get back to? Shut up. Or what, huh? Or you'll do what, Potter? I said shut up, Potter snaps, teeth bared in the snarl, eyes flashing lightning bright. Draco goes utterly still. With the counter digging into his back, there's nowhere to go. It's the first time Potter's let the wolf come this close to the surface. The snarl is all wolf, deadly canines bared in latent fat. It's there in the flex of his hands and quiver of his coiled muscles, wanting to transform into claws and fur and fangs. Is any Potter's tremendous will holding back the wolf inside? Draco should be afraid. He should be terrified. There's something very clearly wrong with him because he is breathless with wonder. Potter's glorious like this, crackling with raw power. He is the most magnificently beautiful creature Draco has ever seen, and Draco aches with wanting him. Potter's nostrils flare and his eyes widen. He takes a stumbling step back, then another. He's blinking hard like he's coming out of a daze. Then he turns on his heel and is out the door before Draco can utter a single word of denial. He knows Draco wants him. Fuck it all to hell. The axe hits right on target, splitting the round in half. Harry grabs one half piece and places it on the basement. The ground is littered with split logs already. Hermione would probably chide him for avoiding emotionally difficult situations. She'd be doing one of her exasperated sighs of, "Boys!" But Hermione isn't here. Draco is. Harry swings the axe again. Draco, who Harry hasn't seen all day. The bedroom door was closed when Harry got up for his run. It was closed when Harry got back. Draco must be around because there was a clean mug and plate on the drying rack. Harry grabs the other halved wood piece. A swing of the axe. He was so angry when he read the letter. How dare Draco use magic on him without his say-so? It doesn't matter if it's any basic diagnostics. It's the principle of the thing. Harry hates how violated he feels. He knows it's not entirely rational, but he can't help the shadow of revulsion. Hermione says it's a trauma response. She gave him books and pamphlets and lots of hugs. The hugs were his favourites. The books were boring and the pamphlets annoying. Fuck trauma. He is done with that. Another piece of wood splits with a loud crack under the swing of his axe. No wonder Draco is avoiding him. He would avoid himself too. He didn't mean to lose it like that, but Draco wouldn't relent, and Harry never quite lost the childish urge to push him into the mud and mess up his neat little facade. Harry almost let the wolf take over. He could feel it rising like the flood in his veins, calling to him to shift and run and claim. He wouldn't have hurt Draco, he knows that much. He would have... Harry's mind conjures up an image of Draco in the kitchen, backed up against the counter, his pulse beating a rhythm Harry could feel in his own veins like the ebb and flow of the tide. Draco's hair had been mussed, disrupting his usually neat appearance, and his rolled-up sleeves presented a clear view of his left arm, covered in ink as if a painter had used a wide brush and splashed him with black paint, a delicate snake winding through the brushstrokes with its head hidden underneath his jumper, resting below Draco's collarbone. His little snake in the grass, Draco calls it. He's a study in contradictions with his harsh tattoo and angular, strangely colourless face and newfound love for swearing, his insistence on the softest, fussiest clothes, mohair and cashmere and silk, and on one memorable occasion, lace, his painted nails and gently flowing hair. Harry loves how much Draco makes sense by not making sense. It hadn't been like that when they started working together. Harry hadn't thought twice about what Draco looked like, and how he acted made Harry want to yell and yell and never stop. He hated being paired with Draco at first. Every day was a struggle. Every case led to screaming row. Draco would fight him every step of the way, mocking him and challenging him, and poking at his tender places until Harry snapped and stormed off. And Harry would do the same to him. But they were a brilliant team. Draco's intellect and Harry's instinct, when paired together, made them unmatched at solving cases, much to Head Robart's annoyance. It was supposed to be a punishment, working together. They'd been partners, and then they'd been friends. Draco has changed, and not changed in so many ways since school. He's lost most of the mindless superiority complex about muggles. Even Hermione considers Draco a friend now. Draco is still a proud, prickly, pure-blood snob of the highest order. But he's also so smart and funny and loyal and devoted to the people he cares about. And he cares about Harry. Harry's been chopping wood for what feels like hours now. His back aches and his hands feel raw and blistered, but he keeps going. Split the round. Split the half. Grab another. Harry knows what he would have done. He would have kissed Draco. He wants to kiss him, and not just in some half-remembered dream. Harry wants to peel off his soft jumper to reveal the softer skin beneath. Wants to know what Draco tastes like. Wants to bury his nose in his hair and chase the scent of berries and herbs on his skin. Harry swings wide and almost takes his own foot off with the axe. Shit. He wants Draco. Posh little wanker that he is. Draco is still a no-show when Harry grabs a quick shower and a bite to eat. The bedroom door stands open, and Harry checks to make sure Draco's things are still here. The bed is done. The pillow seems to have multiplied since he last checked, and Draco's clothes are folded neatly in the dresser. Harry exhales a sigh of relief. At least he didn't manage to chase him off. Draco's cloak and boots are gone, so he must have taken a walk. It can't have been a pleasant experience for Draco, being locked away with Harry for weeks on end with nothing to do but read, drink tea, and watch him. Does Draco see how pathetically grateful Harry is to have someone to sit next to on the sofa? Not just anyone, but someone he trusts. And he trusts Draco, no matter what his teenage self would have had to say about that. Draco has had his back for years now, even when they were at each other's throat. Harry gets why Draco casts the diagnostic charms without asking now that he's had a moment to calm down. He hates it, but he understands. He's a werewolf, and a newly turned one at that. Draco has seen what the bite has done to some of the others being turned, and it can't be easy for him to suppress a lifetime of conditioning that has taught him that werewolves are barely above beasts. There's the Harry Draco knows from before, and there's the Harry he knows now. Draco has every right to take precautions. Harry needs to get a grip. Draco didn't send the letter to just anyone. He sent the diagnostic results to Hermione. Ron and Hermione are family. Harry trusts them unconditionally. They would never betray him. They know him. They see him. Harry, the bloke who trips over his own feet sometimes and hates radishes, and would rather fight another basilisk than read one chapter of Hogwarts the History. Good old boring Harry. They've been with him all the way. They've bled with him, laughed with him, cried with him, and endured him. They still tend to indulge him and forgive too much. He still owes them apologies from some of his more intense rages as a teenager. Draco never indulges him worth shit. It's bloody annoying, but he rather likes it, even when it leads to Draco punching him in the mouth as a hello. Harry stokes the fire so the cabin is warm and Draco returns from wherever he's wandered to. He hangs a pair of Molly's knitted woolen socks near the fireplace so Draco can warm his chilly toes when he comes home. Their evening in the cabin together is excruciating. Draco turns on the radio the moment he walks through the door and then buries his nose in a book, Molly's afghan draped around his shoulders. "Good book?" Harry asks. "Yes," Draco says. "Did you have a nice walk?" "I did. Thank you." They lapse into silence. Harry makes dinner, and Draco keeps precisely maintained distance between them on the sofa. No feet creep near Harry's thighs to warm themselves. No fingers poke or prod at tender places. Harry hates it. He'd rather Draco punch him again. Draco doesn't bring up the fight or the letter or Harry's lapse of control. They go to bed with a murmured, "Good night," shared between them, and Draco closes the bedroom door. Harry lays awake for hours, listening to the crackle of the fire, and trying to ignore the urge to bury his nose in the afghan and fill his head with the lingering scent of berries and herbs. It doesn't get better the next day, or the next. Draco has a cup of tea waiting for Harry when he comes in the door after his morning run, but doesn't stick around for breakfast. Instead of always being around, suddenly Draco is nowhere to be found. It's like living with a ghost. It's agony. It's barely been a month of being cooped up in the cabin together, and already Harry cannot imagine Draco not being here. Draco's possessions mingled with his own. His truly bizarre collection of hair potions stealing a shelf space in the bathroom. His comforting presence next to Harry on the sofa, mocking Harry's romance novels and calling him a hairy mountain man and complaining about the cold. Harry tries to give Draco space. He continues working on a mobile for Rosie's crib, carvings of the different stages of the moon cycle and little howling wolves. Fitting, Harry thinks, as a present from the werewolf uncle. Harry's in the shed, sitting cross-legged on the ground facing the closed door when Draco finds him. He can hear Draco coming, the soft crunch of boots on snow. He doesn't let himself think about it, just keeps going with his training. There's no point in hiding any longer. Today, Harry's not doing Luna's breathing routine, but instead practices his own control exercises. He's in dire need of some more control. The moon is almost full, hanging fat and silver in the sky. Harry can feel its pull like a tightening coil on his muscles, ready to spring. His glasses lay folded up on the workbench behind him, his eyes closed. He hones in on the flow of energy in his veins, focusing on one aspect of the wolf at a time, his fingers, his teeth, his eyes. When he was first bitten, he expected the wolf to be fiery and hot, a wildfire under his skin he could barely hold at bay. Instead, the wolf is like water, like waves lapping at the shore. The moon calls to the wolf like it does to the sea, not like a match thrown into tinder. Harry focuses on his eyes, breathing deep and steady, and allows the wolf to take shape just as the door opens. "I thought you'd like a cup of tea," Draco says. Harry opens his eyes, and Draco inhales sharply. He knows what Draco sees. His eyes are a rich amber color that seems to glow with their own light. Harry holds perfectly still and lets Draco see the wolf in him. His eyes cannot be mistaken for anything but the creature within. Draco doesn't say anything. Harry waits, his own heart hammering in his chest, half afraid of Draco's old instinct kicking in, to read revulsion and horror on his face.
"Say something,"
Harry wants to demand.
"Anything."
Draco has his hair half done up in a loose braid. Harry loves it when he does that. Draco's hands are gripping the saucer so hard, Harry expects it to crack in half under his fingers. Draco's nails are bright blue. "I'm sorry," Draco says, eyes wide. "I didn't mean... I'm sorry." Draco's backing out the door, muttering apologies, his mouth a miserable pinch, and suddenly Harry can smell it on him. A sweetly cloying scent he picked up before. Harry smelled it then, with Draco backed up against the kitchen counter, but Harry's mind had been so clouded with his own anger and the desperate urge to kiss Draco that he hadn't noticed until now. Desire. Draco wants him. How did he not know that? This is new. It has to be new. Harry cannot have missed something so monumental. Harry runs. Snow and ice crunches underfoot and the air bites at his lungs, and still he runs. How long has Draco wanted him? Did he before? Is it the wolf he wants? Harry doesn't know. How can he not know this about Draco? Draco's not shy about what he wants. Harry's seen how he acts when he's out to get laid. He's not subtle. Fir tree rush past as Harry runs, branches laden heavy with snow, twigs and grass in the underbrush crusted in ice. The wind has picked up and dries fresh snow in his face. There's an orange powdery haze in the air from the drifting snowfall. It's getting dark, and still he runs, replaying the moment in the kitchen over and over in his mind. If he kissed Draco, would Draco have kissed him back? If Draco wants him, why is he avoiding him? Why does Draco never make any sense? Harry slips on a patch of ice and almost goes down. He pauses with his hands on his knees, panting hard. His lungs are on fire and his face feels like it's frozen solid. Snow falls heavily all around him and the only thing he hears is the whistling of the wind in the trees. He looks around and notices he almost made it once around the valley. He is almost back at the cabin. It calls to him, the warmth of the fireplace, the sofa with Molly's afghan, Draco wrapped in soft cashmere with his nose buried in a book. Harry wants to rush back home and rest his head in Draco's lap. The wolf wants to curl up at the foot of Draco's bed, tuck his nose into the fluff of his tail and go to sleep. Harry can feel the tide rising in him. The moon is almost full and Draco has eroded his control down to a nub. He is fraying at the edges. He's not this person. possessive and desirous of the single-minded chant of Draco, 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 echoing in his mind. All Harry can think about is Draco, but he doesn't know if he's strong enough to keep the wolf at bay, to be gentle when all he wants is to sink his teeth in and never let go. He can't be around Draco, not now. He turns towards home, anyway.
Draco's pacing back and forth, wearing a groove into the cheap flooring. Potter's been gone for the better part of the afternoon. It's getting dark outside, and the wind is howling ominously, picking up strength. Still, Potter isn't here. The radio's on in the background, the news warning about an impending storm. Draco paces, the floorboards creaking under his feet. Now and then he stops by the window to peer out into the gloom. Shadows are closing rank between the trees, a white veil coming down from the sky. Still, no Potter. What if he's got himself hurt? Maybe he's slipped on some ice and is lying in a ditch. Draco has no way of knowing. He knew this would happen if Potter ever found out. The whole house of cards would come crashing down on Draco's head. He should never have come here. How stupid of him to think he could spend all this time in close quarters with Potter and not slip up. Now Potter's out there in an oncoming storm with his head cracked open like an egg.
He needs to get out there.
Draco has his boots on and is buttoning up his cloak when the door creaks open and Potter's standing in the doorway. Glasses fogged up, snow in his beard and all over his shoulders and beanie. Harry Potter is a maddening, infuriating tosser, and Draco is going to kill him.
Where were you? Draco snaps.
Harry slips off his beanie, wipes his glasses and shakes out his hair. He shrugs as if nothing's amiss.
Ow.
Draco will kill him slowly, and he won't even feel bad about it.
Out? Did you notice there's a storm coming, or do you think it doesn't affect you?
What?
You could be freezing to death in a snowdrift.
Draco.
Don't Draco me.
He will kill Harry Potter, and then he will go to Azkaban. Screw Azkaban, they will call the Dementors just for him. He will get the kiss, and Mother will cry, and then she'll seek vengeance and everyone will cry. And all because Harry Potter is a fucking coward hiding amongst the trees.
I don't have words for how much I hate you.
Draco, don't be dramatic.
Enough.
Draco's had enough. This is more than he can take.
No, he says. No, Potter. You can go on sitting in your fortress of solitude, but I am done.
Draco. Potter's still just standing there, looking at Draco as if he's the unreasonable one here.
Stop calling me Draco,
Draco yells, his voice echoing in the small space.
I don't call you Harry. What happened to Malfoy? You should call me Malfoy.
You can call me Harry. Harry wishes he had his glasses on to see Draco's expression more clearly, but the bite hasn't improved his vision, and the wolf's eyes only work better at night. Draco shakes his head.
No.
Call me Harry. Potter's coming closer. His movements are sinuous, and there's no other word for it. He's prowling. His fingers flex at his sides.
No, Draco says.
He's standing between the fireplace and the sofa. There's nowhere for him to go. Potter's blocking the only exit. Draco backs up a step.
Draco, stop.
Draco. Potter's voice has a breathless quality to it. Draco backs up another step. Potter's so close now, Draco can count the faint freckles across the bridge of his nose. He swallows.
I'm not done fighting.
Potter takes one last step into Draco's space, says, but I am, and kisses him. His lips are chapped and his beard is scratchy. Draco makes a small sound and sinks into the broad palms trailing his face and the warmth of Potter's mouth, helpless to resist. Potter kisses him like he's been dying to touch him, his broad muscular body crowding Draco's against the wall, making it hard to stay upright and not fall into him. Potter would hold him so safe, and he's so warm, always warm. Draco opens his mouth on Potter's tongue, the first touch stinging down his spine, a and he clutches at Potter's jumper, wet from the snow, and pulls. Closer. Potter smells like pine needles and clean sweat in the outdoors. Draco wants more. Potter's hand is in his hair now, gripping and bending his head back. His mouth smears wetly across his cheek, his jaw down his neck. Potter's breath a humid warm puff against his skin. He's going to be rubbed raw from Potter's beard. Potter puts his open mouth there, against Draco's neck. Warm wet tongue against the galloping pulse, panting against the hollow of his throat. Draco's scalp smarts from the grip of Potter's fist in his hair, and he's so hard he wants to cry, just from a kiss. Please, Draco gasps. Harry, motherfucker. Potter has bitten him. The back of Draco's head hits the wall as Potter shoves off him. He looks wild. His hair's a mess and his jumper's rocked up and his glasses are crooked. He's panting like he's been running for miles and his eyes glow amber in his flushed face, impossibly bright. Draco's hand finds his neck and comes away bloody. Potter bit him. Potter trails off. His eyes are white, gaze darting from the red streaks on Draco's fingers to Draco's neck and back to his fingers. Back and forth, again and again, as if he's stuck in a loop. I'm sorry, Draco. He shakes his head. I can't. I'm so sorry. Potter staggers back, one hand groping wildly for the door handle, and then he is gone. Out the door and into the night. Draco hears the reverberating bang of the shed door slamming close. Fuck. Draco pushes off the wall and wipes his hand off on his trousers. He licks his lips. His bottom lip feels hot and swollen. He can taste Potter. Harry. On his tongue. He can taste Harry. What does it matter now what she calls him? He walks into the bedroom in a daze. His black travel bag is under the bed. He pulls out clothes from the dresser at random and throws them into the open bag. Jumpers and underwear, socks and trousers. His toiletries are in the bathroom. What else? What did he bring? What does it matter? He looks down at the bag on the bed. Harry can have it back now. The mattress Draco transfigured, and all the pillows, and the softest, fluffiest duvet Draco ever slept under. It doesn't matter now. Draco leaves the bag where it is. He grabs his wand and his cloak and his scarf, and walks out into the gathering storm.
You've been listening to Human, written by Akari and read by Reverie Pie.